This is the daily radio ministry of Pastor Sandy Adams of Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Pastor Sandy is currently teaching through the book of Proverbs. Today, Pastor Sandy will teach through Proverbs, chapters 22 through 24.
If your confidence is in money, then you'll never feel secure. And one of two tragedies will occur in your life. Either you'll become a workaholic and you'll work yourself into the ground because you got to have more and you'll never enjoy what you have, or the money you gain will take wings and fly away. All it takes is one major illness or one economic collapse to wipe out a nest egg. This is why we need to put our hope in Jesus. He alone makes life worth living. He says, "Do not eat the bread of a miser, nor desire his delicacies, for as he thinks in his heart, so is he." This is such a vital verse. It conveys the importance of our thoughts. You know, your life is a reflection of your thought life. As a man thinks, so is he. This is why it's strategic to be selective. Do you pay attention to what you think? Do you pay attention to what goes into your mind? What you think and how you think will ultimately determine the trajectory of your life. Be careful with what you entertain and with what entertains you. Garbage in, garbage out. Secular thoughts produce a secular life. Think godly thoughts. Think about life from a godly perspective. Adopt a biblical, righteous outlook on life. Think God's thoughts and you'll become a godly person. Verse 7 continues, "Eat and drink, he says to you, but his heart is not with you." A snob will invite you to eat, not because he's generous or because he wants to share. He just wants to save face, and he hopes that you'll say no, that you'll decline his invitation. I mean, this is like the lunch appointment who offers to pick up the check, knowing full well that you won't let him, but he offers just so that he can look good. That's what this proverb is saying. You need to recognize this attitude when you see it, and you need to avoid that person. Or the morsel you have eaten, you will vomit up and waste your pleasant words. That kind of generosity backfires. It's just not worth it. You know, just go ahead and pay it yourself. Verse 9, "Do not speak in the hearing of a fool, for he will despise the wisdom of your words. Do not remove the ancient landmark, nor enter the fields of the fatherless, for their Redeemer is mighty. He will plead their cause against you." God himself protects those who need protection. Try to take advantage of an orphan and steal his inheritance. Slip out at night and move the pins that mark the property, and God will defend your neighbors. You know, there's a spiritual parallel here as well. You know, American society as we know it today was built on ancient landmarks. You know that our form of democracy was spawned by principles which emerged from the Protestant Reformation. Christianity and the Bible are responsible for the America that we know and enjoy today. And yet there are multiple movements afoot today that want to remove our ancient landmarks. They want to rewrite American history and reinterpret our Constitution. America was founded on freedom of religion, not freedom from religion. Yes, it's separation of church and state, but it's not separation of God and state. As Solomon says, our Redeemer is mighty, and the person who messes with the landmarks can expect to ultimately answer to God. Now, verse 12, "Apply your heart to instruction and your ears to words of knowledge. Do not withhold correction from a child, for if you beat him with a rod, he won't die." He'll squeal, cry, and act like he's going to die, but he won't die. "You shall beat him with a rod and deliver his soul from hell." Solomon is certainly not suggesting child abuse here. Let me make that clear. The Hebrew word translated beat literally means to strike. And it would better be translated spank. That's what he's referring to as a spanking here. You know, they don't break. You know, if you spank your kid, he won't break. He won't just fall apart, you know. You know, they can take it and it'll get a point across. And it might just save his soul from hell, the scripture says. The stakes are pretty high here, according to Solomon. He says, my son, if your heart is wise, my heart will rejoice. Indeed, I myself, yes, my utmost being will rejoice when your lips speak right things. Do not let your heart envy sinners, but be zealous for the fear of the Lord all the day. For surely there is a hereafter, and your hope will not be cut off. And in this life, in this fallen world, we're forced to deal with all kinds of ironies and inconsistencies. You know, good is not always rewarded. Evil is not always punished. You know, it does pay to be good and godly. The problem, though, is that payday doesn't always come in this life. Solomon says, surely there is a hereafter. There is a life yet to come. This life is not all there is to it. There is a heaven and there is a hell. And eternity will provide plenty of time for God to sort out these matters justly and mercifully. You know, in the words of the poet, at the moment it appears that right is forever on the scaffold and wrong is forever on the throne. Don't you sense that sometimes? Don't you think that's the case sometimes? But one day soon, that'll be reversed. For King Jesus will come and he will reign. And when he does, wrong will forever be on the scaffold and right will forever be on the throne. Verse 19, hear my son and be wise and guide your heart in the way. Do not mix with winebibbers or drunkards or with gluttonous eaters of meat. Now the winebibbers I wasn't real worried about, but this next place here, this gluttonous eaters of meat, I resemble that remark. For the drunkard and the glutton will come to poverty, and drowsiness will clothe a man with rags. Notice this. An addiction to Bud Light or Jack Daniels, according to the Proverbs, is in the same category as an addiction to barbecue ribs or strawberry shortcake. Isn't it amazing how we classify sins conveniently? Oh, that's a horrible sin. Drunkenness. But gluttony. Oh my. We have church potlucks and fellowship times where we all get gluttonous. We all come to church. We all just get gluttonous together. Call it fellowship. It's amazing. Drunkenness, gluttony, and laziness are all three kissing cousins, and they're all categorized together right here. Now, from here to the end of the chapter, we're warned about women and wine. Chapter 23 exposes the dangers of wealth, wine, and women. Verse 22, listen to your father who begot you, and do not despise your mother when she is old. Buy the truth and do not sell it. Also wisdom and instruction and understanding. The father of the righteous will greatly rejoice, and he who begets a wise child will delight in him. Let your father and your mother be glad, and let her who bore you rejoice. My son, give me your heart, and let your eyes observe my ways. Verse 27, for a harlot is a deep pit, and a seductress is a narrow well. You know, all forms of lust, pornography and adultery and casual sex and cohabitation and strip clubs and prostitutions, it's all a pit. It's so easy to fall into, but it's so difficult to get out of. You know, in these next few verses, Solomon is calling for his son to learn from his father's mistakes. Boy, if anybody had a lust problem, it was Solomon. You remember in defiance to God's law, he multiplied wives. He had some 700 wives and 300 concubines. Some of his marriages were political conveniences, but lust, believe me, was a major motivation in Solomon's heart. And Solomon describes the harlot. He's thinking here of a professional hooker. But his description also applies to a single woman who needs a man's attention, and so she acts like a harlot in order to feed her own self-esteem. We're told she also lies in wait as for a victim, and increases the unfaithful among men. She destroys families. She brings men down, and she takes some perverse delight in that. Who has woe? Who has sorrow? Who has contentions? Who has complaints? Who has wounds without cause? I mean, the man who falls for this woman ends up with terrible hurts that he could have avoided. He says, who has redness of eyes? Those who linger long at the wine, those who go in search of mixed wine. Notice the role that alcohol plays in the sin of adultery. You know, it's easier to forget solemn vows and ignore the feelings of people that are hurting, and to even put your reputation on the shelf once you get a little tipsy. It's amazing the connection here between adultery and alcohol. Solomon warns his son, do not look on the wine when it is red, when it sparkles in the cup, when it swirls around smoothly. Notice the expression here, the wine when it is red. That's another way of saying fermented wine. We're not talking about an O'Doul's here. This is a big old can of Sam Adams. And notice Solomon even warns about the alcohol's appearance. It sparkles in the cup, he says. It swirls around smoothly. You read these descriptions and you think of the beer commercials on television. I mean, it's all so deceptive. The camera zooms in on the mug, and the beer just sort of dances in and kind of sloshes down and cascades down the side of the glass. It's like a refreshing waterfall. And then the foam sort of oozes up over the lip of the mug and slides down the frosted glass. And then a drop-dead gorgeous girl picks up the mug and looks at you, takes a big long slurp. And it all looks so fun and so exciting and so innocent. Man, this is the ticket to happiness. Let me go out and buy a six-pack. Until I read verse 32. But at the last, it bites like a serpent and it stings like a viper. The camera doesn't show you the hangover the next day or the guy's head in the toilet as he heaves up his dinner or the injured wife who discovers his infidelity, or the angry kids who once trusted their dad but now feel betrayed. I'll never respect him again. Doesn't show the child support payments that follow and the financial ruin. Just all looks so innocent and so victimless on television. Guys, it is a deception. Verse 33 continues to describe the effects of alcohol. Your eyes will see strange things. And your heart will utter perverse things. Yes, you will be like one who lies down in the midst of the sea. Ever been seasick? Or like one who lies at the top of the mast saying, they have struck me, but I was not hurt. They have beaten me, but I did not feel it. When shall I awake that I may seek another drink? He's describing a man in a drunken stupor who doesn't realize the trouble he's in. He's just sort of, you know, he's paralyzed. He's getting beat up and he doesn't even know it. All he cares about is just waking up and seeking another drink. Again, beware of the effects of alcohol. Yeah, Pastor Sandy, but the New Testament says that Christians are set free. We're allowed by Paul to drink in moderation. And that's true. But you need to understand, your freedom doesn't change the potency and the danger of the alcohol. Exercising your freedom, is it worth getting bit or getting stung? For the alcohol at last bites like a serpent and stings like a viper. Beware, you're handling a dangerous thing. Chapter 24. Do not be envious of evil men, nor desire to be with them, for their heart devises violence, and their lips talk of troublemaking. Through wisdom a house is built, and by understanding it is established. By knowledge the rooms are filled with all precious and pleasant riches. A wise man is strong. Yes, a man of knowledge increases strength. For by wise counsel you will wage your own war. And in a multitude of counselors there is safety. Wisdom is too lofty for a fool. He does not open his mouth in the gate. The city gate was the equivalent of town hall or the courthouse steps, as we might say. It's where the leaders would meet and discuss problems and make decisions. Here the fool is quick to speak when no one's around, but he keeps his mouth shut in public for fear that he might be challenged or he might be cross-examined and it be detected what a fool he truly is. He says, he who plots to do evil will be called a schemer. The devising of foolishness is sin, and the scoffer is an abomination to men. If you faint in the day of adversity, your strength is small. You know, people sometimes say tough times make us strong. That's not true. Tough times don't make us strong. They only reveal the strength that was there all along. I like the old adage, Christians are like tea bags. You don't know what's in them until you put them in hot water. If you faint in the day of adversity, we know then that your strength was really small. Verse 11, deliver those who are drawn toward death and hold back those stumbling to the slaughter. Did you know that there are people around you that are literally being drawn to death? They're being lured. The devil is enticing them into deeper and deeper trouble. You can say they're going to hell in a handbasket. They're duped and they're dashing to destruction. And it's up to us to grab them and share with them the truth. In the little book of Jude, we're told that on some folks, we need to show compassion. But there are other people who require desperation evangelism. Jude 23 says, but others save with fear, pulling them out of the fire. You just have to corner them, get in their face, grab them and sit them down for a little bit until you have a chance to share the truth with them. Some people you can kind of win, you know, through a gradual process, but other people you just got to get in their face and try to pull them out of the fire. It's a desperation evangelism. Verse 12, if you say, surely we did not know this, does not he who weighs the hearts consider it? He who keeps your soul, does he not know it? And will he not render to each man according to his deeds? You can't excuse your sin by claiming ignorance. God will hold every man responsible. He says, my son, eat honey because it is good. I like honey. And the honeycomb, which is sweet to your taste, so shall the knowledge of wisdom be to your soul. It's like honey. If you have found it, there is a prospect and your hope will not be cut off. Do not lie in wait, a wicked man, against the dwelling of the righteous. Do not plunder his resting place. For a righteous man may fall 7 times and rise again, but the wicked shall fall by calamity. It's not how many times you fall down that matters, as long as you get back up one more time. You know, the Christian God, the God that we serve, is the God of the second chance and the third chance and the fourth chance. And that one more chance, as long as that person is alive and that person is repentant and that person wants to change and they're looking to God for help. There are no limits on God's grace. In 1975, in the Sugar Bowl game, Alabama beat Penn State 13-6. But the Nittany Lions might have won the game if they had not had a late game touchdown called back. On the crucial play, Penn State was penalized for having a 12th man on the field. After the game, Coach Joe Paterno was asked by a reporter to identify the guilty player. But Paterno, he refused. In fact, he answered, it's only a game, and I have no intention of ever identifying the boy. He just made a mistake. Hey, never try to belittle your sins. Sin is serious, but God is just as gracious, even more so than this coach. You know, the psalmist says that God knows that we're but dust. I believe there are times when we expect more out of ourselves than God does. Here we're told, when a righteous man, a man who trusts God, when he falls, God will pick him up again. If he has a repentant heart, if he's asked God for help, God will have mercy and God will pick him up again. You can't fall too many times that God won't pick you back up if you're truly repentant. But when a wicked man falls, when an unbeliever falls, man, he lands with a thud because there's nobody there to pick him up. Well, verse 17, do not rejoice when your enemy falls, and do not let your heart be glad when he stumbles, lest the Lord see it and it displease him and he turn away his wrath from him. And rejoice at your enemy's calamity, and God might help him back up just to triumph over you. Be careful. Do not fret because of evildoers, nor be envious of the wicked, for there will be no prospect for the evil man. The lamp of the wicked will be put out. God will even the score on the final day of class. My son, fear the Lord and the king. Do not associate with those given to change, for their calamity will rise suddenly. And who knows the ruin those two can bring? Be careful about those who promise change just for change's sake. In other words, before you throw out the king, make sure you know about his replacement. Before you just opt for change, make sure you understand what changes you're accepting. The change could prove worse than the predecessor. Now, these things also belong to the wise. It is not good to show partiality in judgment. He who says to the wicked, "You are righteous," him the people will curse. Nations will abhor him. But those who rebuke the wicked will have delight, and a good blessing will come upon them. Don't gloss over the sins of the wicked. People respect impartial judgment. Verse 26, he who gives a right answer kisses the lips. Have you ever tried to conduct business and gotten the proverbial runaround? I mean, this happens on the phone to me all the time. You know, I'm being transferred from one person to the next person, to the next person, to the next person. And, you know, man, is there anybody there who can give me a straight answer? Finally, one person comes to the phone. They come to the rescue. They tell me what I need to hear, and I feel like kissing them on the lips. That's what he says here. He who gives a right answer kisses the lips. Verse 27 is excellent advice for a young man. Prepare your outside work. Make it fit for yourself in the field, and afterward build your house. I like that. That is great advice for young men. Solomon is saying to his son, finish your education, then get established in your career before you start your family. Number one, rather than vague promises, it gives your future wife an idea of what she can expect, what she's getting into. You know, one of the biggest problems we have working with pastors is that so many of the guys, they feel called to the ministry after they've gotten married. They feel called to the ministry. They want to serve God. But the poor wife now gets drug along. She might not have wanted to be a pastor's wife. This is why you should prepare your outside work first and then build your house. The other reason here is that starting out in a career requires long hours, requires a lot of hard work, and that lifestyle might not be compatible with a happy married life. And so, good wisdom here for young men. Verse 28, do not be a witness against your neighbor without a cause, for would you deceive with your lips? Do not say, I will do to him just as he has done to me. I will render to the man according to his work. You know, Romans 12, verse 19 is the New Testament echo here. There we're told, beloved, do not avenge yourselves, for it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, says the Lord. I went by the field of the lazy man and by the vineyard of the man devoid of understanding. And there it was, all overgrown with thorns. Its surface was covered with nettles. Its stone wall was broken down. When I saw it, I considered it well. I looked on it and received instruction. A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest. So shall your poverty come like a prowler, and your need like an armed man. He's saying just a short season of laziness can put a man in dangerous situations. Just a short season of laziness can get you dangerously behind. Just a little neglect with your vineyard. And one day you wake up and things are overgrown and out of control, and you got a problem on your hands. Just a nap here. Just a sick day there. Just a long lunch. Just a week off without pay. A little sleep. A little slumber. A little folding of the hands. That's all it takes. Once you fall asleep on the job, it doesn't take much for destruction to follow. It was Charlie McCarthy who quipped, hard work never killed anybody, but why take a chance? It's a funny line, unless you think it's true. Don't be lazy. Christians of all people should be known for our industriousness. From March the 10th to the 23rd, I'll be leading a tour to Israel, and we would love for any of our listeners to join us. We'll start at the magnificent theater on the Mediterranean where Paul preached to King Agrippa, and we'll end with worship and communion at the Garden Tomb. In between, it's one exciting adventure after another. Imagine relaxing by the Sea of Galilee one day and floating on the Dead Sea the next, exploring waterfalls in the Golan Heights, and admiring the desert from the top of Masada. We'll spend time in the rock city of Petra and in the holy city of Jerusalem. We'll ride camels, wade through Hezekiah's tunnel, boat across the Sea of Galilee, and study God's word at every turn. Hey, a trip to Israel is like a Bible study on steroids. If you've never been, I encourage you to go. And if you like, you can go with us. Our trip is affordably priced. If you'd like more details, please contact us. Here's Josh to give you that information.
Thanks, Pastor Sandy. Yes, to learn more about this exciting trip, visit sandyadams.org. Again, this amazing trip is taking place March 10th through the 23rd, 2019. We encourage you to contact the church office at Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain. You can call us at 770-736-2828 or log on to sandyadams.org. On behalf of Pastor Sandy and the entire production team, it's our prayer that you would seek the Lord about joining Pastor Sandy in Israel in March of 2019.